This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight.
On World Press Freedom Day, I call for an end to all crackdowns against journalists, because a free press advances peace and justice for all.
That's UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres. Details coming up. Also, there are reports that Boko Haram's leader has been injured in an airstrike in northeastern Nigeria. Burundi faces a serious gasoline shortage, and hundreds of Italian police raid a makeshift migrant camp in Milan's main train station. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Topping the news, today is World Press Freedom Day. It's a day to celebrate the fundamental principles of press freedom while defending the media against attacks around the world. This year's theme is Critical Minds for Critical Times. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres spoke of the risks journalists face every day.
Journalists go to the most dangerous places to give voice to the voiceless. Media workers suffer character assassination, sexual assault, detention, injuries, and even death. We need leaders to defend the free media. This is crucial to counter prevailing misinformation, and we need everyone to stand for our right to truth. On World Press Freedom Day, I call for an end to all crackdowns against journalists, because a free press advances peace and justice for all. When we protect journalists, their words and pictures can change our world.
That's UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres speaking about World Press Freedom Day. There are reports today that Boko Haram leader Abubakar Shekau has been injured in an airstrike in northeastern Nigeria. AFP quotes civilian and security sources as saying one of Shekau's deputies, Abba Mustafa, was killed in the strike last Friday on the village of Bala. That's on the edge of the Sambisa Forest, which has been a Boko Haram stronghold. One source is saying that the Boko Haram leader was receiving medical treatment in the Kolafata area near the Cameroon border. No word on his condition. The Nigerian military has not confirmed the reports. Officials have claimed at least three times in the past to have killed Shekau. Kenya's Electoral Commission is appealing a court ruling that election results announced at the constituency level are final. The commission says that opens the way to manipulation. Mohammed Yusuf reports.
The bad blood between the Kenya's political opposition and its electoral commission has been taken to the corridors of justice 3 months before the August poll. The Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission is appealing a High Court ruling that bans the commission chairman from making the official announcement of presidential vote totals from each constituency. The court ruled that vote totals announced at polling stations and the constituency level are final. The Kenya Country Director of the Johannesburg-based non-profit Electoral Law and Governance Institute in Africa, Felix Odhiambo, says previous electoral laws did not favour the commission.
What IEBC is seeking to do is a discretion that has been misused in this country time and again by allowing the electoral, the chairperson of the commission be the final returning officer with respect to the elections of the president. If you look at 2007 elections and 2013 elections, the conduct of the chairperson of the IEBC and what the IEBC did at the National Tallying Centre was subject to many, many litigations.
It took days to announce the presidential vote results in 2007 and 2013, with charges of altering figures at the national level. The 2007 disputed results put Kenya on the brink of civil war. Communities turned against each other, resulting in more than 1,000 deaths and hundreds of thousands left homeless. Odhiambo says the court made the right decision.
The High Court properly read the mood of Kenyans. The Court of Appeal dealt with over 188 petitions, and in those petitions during the 2013 elections, they saw the conduct of IEBC personnel both at the National Tallying Center and at the constituencies. And they then also looked at the constitution and made the correct interpretation that the finality of voting, the finality of results is at the constituency and not at the National Tallying Center in Nairobi.
But the Electoral Commission argues the results can be altered at the constituency level, and the ultimate decision should lie with its chairman. Opposition politician Johnson Muthama threatened a boycott if the appeal favours the IEBC.
Wasijaribu kubandirisha hii sheria. Mahana kama hii haipo na mimi nataka kutangaza.
He says the commission should not try to change electoral laws, and if the law is changed, the opposition will not participate in the general election. Last December, the Electoral Commission was successful in petitioning Kenya's parliament to change laws to allow the use of manual voter registration in case electronic technology fails. President Uhuru Kenyatta is running for a second term. His closest challenger is former Prime Minister Raila Odinga. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
A new report from Oxfam International says decades of economic growth in Africa have mostly benefited a wealthy elite while leaving millions of ordinary Africans behind. Oxfam released its report at the World Economic Forum Africa, which opened today in Durban, South Africa. The report quotes data from the Brookings Institute, which show that levels of inequality in Africa are higher than previously thought. Of the 20 countries listed as most unequal in the Oxfam report, 7 are in Africa. Swaziland tops the list, followed by Nigeria. It warns up to 350 million people in Africa could fall into extreme poverty in the next 15 years. Burundi has been facing a serious gasoline shortage for more than a week in the capital. AFP reports the shortage is blamed on a lack of foreign exchange following 2 years of political turmoil and violence. In Bujumbura, the price of gasoline on the black market has risen to $4 a liter, in some places more than triple the usual price. In Gitega, Burundi's second largest city, AFP says little, if any, gasoline has been available for the past month. The country's political crisis began in April 2015 when President Pierre Nkurunziza announced he would seek a third term in office. Critics called it unconstitutional and violated the Arusha Peace Accord. The violence has left between 500 and 2,000 people dead. There are reports of hundreds of people disappearing or being tortured and some 400,000 people fleeing to neighboring countries. Since the crisis began, Burundi's economic growth has dropped from 4.7% to about 0.5%. Former Tanzanian President Benjamin Mkapa, who mediates the inter-Burundi dialogue, is scheduled to visit today. Well, there's public outcry in Italy today, both for and against a police raid on a makeshift migrant camp in Milan. And political debate is heating up over accusations that humanitarian agencies are making the migrant flow to Italy worse. Reporter Josephine McKenna is following developments. From Rome, she spoke with VOA's Joe DiCapua first about the incident in Milan.
About 300 police moved into Milan's central station yesterday and removed at least 50 migrants who were taken to the police station. They used sniffer dogs, horses, helicopters. It was a major operation. They closed the entrance to the metro station there, really to try and clamp down on illegal immigrants. They checked the status of dozens of asylum seekers. And interestingly, among those that were taken to the police station, they found that 4 from Senegal and Gambia had actually been granted refugee status in Italy, but these 4 migrants were not even aware of that themselves. So we saw a major police operation trying to move these migrants out of the station. And since then, there's been a political storm about whether that was the right thing to do or not.
Josephine, had they been camping at the station?
They've been camping at the station for several months, and when I went through there just a few days ago, it was quite amazing, actually. There were dozens of African migrants in the main piazza in front of the station and living around that area, and so that's why it has become such a hot political issue. And today we saw a huge reaction from politicians around the country. The head of the Northern League, the anti-immigrant Northern League, Matteo Salvini, welcomed the raid. He said it was beautiful, and he actually recorded police in a live feed on his Facebook page while it was happening. And he said, thank God for the police. We don't need these people in Italy. That's provoked a huge debate from people who still believe that the Italian government should be supporting migrants who arrive here.
Now, there's also continuing debate over the role of NGOs in migrant rescues. What's happening there?
The Italian Parliament is holding an inquiry into allegations that the NGOs that are saving migrants' lives in the Mediterranean are actually somehow directly involved with people smugglers in Libya. Now, we've seen some pretty strong comments coming out from organisations like Doctors Without Borders, MOAS, and some of the others saying that we have absolutely nothing to do with the people smugglers. We're simply there to save lives. And yesterday, Doctors Without Borders, Médecins Sans Frontières, held a press conference here in Rome to say they were very angry and saying that they are really sick and tired of what they called mountains of rubbish that are being cast in their direction to suggest that they are not acting in an ethical way. And today, the Italian Coast Guard has actually come out in defence of these NGOs, saying that there is not what they call a pull factor, that these NGOs are not attracting migrants. They're simply there to lend a hand and save lives in the Mediterranean.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna in Rome. She spoke with VOA's Joe DiCapua. At a recent Senate Foreign Relations Committee hearing, senior lawmakers from both parties rejected President Trump's declaration that the U.S. has no role in Libya. Some lawmakers argue that it is in the national security interest of the U.S. to be engaged in the North African country. Ambassador David Mack is a scholar at the Middle East Institute in Washington and a former U.S. Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for Near East. He spoke with VOA's Mohammed El-Shanawi about the message the committee sent to the Trump administration.
This was a very important hearing, and there was virtual bilateral consensus from members of the committee that the United States needed to be involved in Libya in some way, and not only in a counterterrorism mode. So this did seem to be contradictory to the statement the president had made just a day or two before, as an offhand remark, answering a question in his press conference with the Italian premier, who had said that it would be important for the United States to be involved in international efforts and to play a role in Libya. And the president simply responded, the U.S. has no role in Libya. I think one has to understand that sometimes the offhand remarks of President Trump do not indicate the full range of his thinking about a matter. Clearly, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee was taking an unusually strong and assertive position that the United States would have a role to play.
Some experts recommended that the U.S. should back a Libyan-led dialogue to amend the Libyan political agreement of 2015 to be more inclusive and to secure a transparent distribution of oil revenues. Is that the best role the United States can play in Libya?
Well, certainly the United States is not going to lead such political discussions. President Trump in particular, and other people in the administration and in the Congress as well, don't want the United States to get into nation building in Libya. And in fact, President Obama was very reluctant to do that, intended to defer to the leadership of the United Nations and our European allies. And I think that that will be the case going forward. If the European allies, working under a UN umbrella along with us, decide to take a position in helping to mediate between Libyan factions, I suspect that the United States will be involved in the consensus, but just not play a leading role in the matter.
So if a new government would emerge from such dialogue, what should the U.S. do to support it and ensure that it would lead Libya to stability and security?
Well, we've already seen that the United States will play a very strong role in the sense of providing military support to Libyan government forces that are involved in dealing with counterterrorism. We have done so on several occasions now, most notably in assisting the Libyans in the reconquest of Sirte.
That was Ambassador David Mack of the Middle East Institute in Washington. He spoke with VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawy. You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. At 21 minutes past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. There are reports that Boko Haram leader Abubakar Shekau has been injured in an airstrike in northeastern Nigeria. A new Oxfam report says most Africans have been left behind by economic growth, and hundreds of Italian police raid a makeshift migrant camp in Milan's main train station. For more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Yesterday, we presented a report on autism, a lifelong communication and behavior disorder. It usually manifests in children around the age of 18 months to 2.5 years. 80% of children diagnosed with autism are male. In the U.S., parents can get an early diagnosis and begin treatment, but parents in Africa lack both information and autism specialists. Autistic children in Africa often are diagnosed at a much later age, around 8. By that time, the disorder can be more severe, to the point of the child not speaking. Dr. John McLaughlin is an educator and researcher with a specialty in autism. He authored the new book, How Autism is Reshaping Special Education, The Unbundling of Idea. He spoke with me about the challenge of getting proper treatment of autism in Africa.
Here in the United States, the treatment that is most recognized and most research-based as getting results is applied behavioral analysis. Applied behavioral analysis is a type of psychology that was created in the 1970s, and over the last 4 or 5 decades has really evolved into a pretty substantial field with research, a field with certification standards for people to be applied behavioral analysts. About half of the states in this country recognize and license applied behavioral analysts. We have in this nation far fewer applied behavior analysts than we need. We need about at least 100,000 just to address the children with autism. We have about 20,000 applied behavior analysts called BCBAs, Board Certified Behavior Analysts. In Africa, in the entire continent, according to the Behavior Analyst Certification Board, which certifies behavior analysts worldwide, there are only 6 BCBAs on the continent of Africa, 2 in Egypt, 2 in Kenya, and 1 each in South Africa and Botswana. They are the frontline improvers of a child's life, particularly in developing more appropriate behaviors and language development, and they simply don't exist. Now, going hand in hand with improving the knowledge of primary care physicians and mental health workers in Africa about autism would be the development of a treatment course, and that would be applied behavioral analysis.
You had mentioned that now it's 1 in 68 children are diagnosed with autism, and it seems like that has just increased so tremendously over the years. Is there anything contributing to that environmentally?
There are several factors. Probably the greatest contributing factor is the adjustment in the diagnosis of autism. The standards for which diseases or disabilities are diagnosed is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. We're in the 5th edition of that agreed-upon manual, or those agreed-upon standards. The 5th edition came out several years ago. It was not a surprise. It was scientifically and organizationally discussed that the diagnostic standards of autism would be adjusted. And they were. And in its adjustment, it widened the framework or the umbrella under which children with the disability would be identified, or the types of identification of characteristics that would classify them as autistic. So we've widened the definition, and so that accounts for a lot. Simultaneously, as we've widened the definition for autism, we've identified less children with disabilities that they may have been labeled with, say, 20 years ago, developmental delay, dyslexia, other types of disabilities that have gone down as autism has risen. So the incidence of children with autism has gone up, but the overall numbers of children who have been identified as having exceptionalities remained relatively stable. One of the reasons that autism is very prevalent in the United States is an awareness campaign created by Autism Speaks, which began in 2004, and its mission was to make autism better known, and it has certainly succeeded in this country and around the world with that mission. When I think about autism and I think about Africa, autism exists in Africa. It undoubtedly exists, but probably the prevalence is unknown, but whether it's 1 in 68, like in the United States, be interesting to know, because it would help the worldwide autism community have an important data point on autism's environmental and genetic factors. That would be very helpful. Other things would help families, children with autism in developing Africa would be the improvement of the knowledge of primary care physicians and mental health professionals there, and the development of more board-certified behavior analysts who would be able to treat children with autism, and that's the best treatment we have in the United States on that.
Dr. John McLaughlin is an educator and researcher with a specialty in autism. He spoke with me from Nashville, Tennessee. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nick Ivanoff, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I am Shaka Sali. Join me on Straight Talk Africa every Wednesday as we discuss topics of special interest to Africans, including politics, economic development, press freedom, health, social issues, and conflict resolution. Take your pick. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Malaria kills thousands of people each year, but there are some simple things you can do to protect your family. If you can, put screens in your windows. A simple screen can keep disease-carrying mosquitoes out of your home. If you go outside, wear light-colored clothing and long pants and long sleeves, especially when it is dark and mosquitoes are most active. After it rains, empty all containers of standing water. The water in just one discarded tire can become a breeding ground for thousands of mosquitoes. Make sure your home is clear of debris and anything that holds water, including discarded cans, water containers, and rubbish. Empty containers that livestock drink from regularly so that mosquitoes cannot breed there.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bungani in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today, because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Can't AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
employment rates are climbing. So definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.